Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're setting out to explore something pretty remarkable, the heritage of Kurdish literature. We'll be looking at how it's, well, survived, how it's changed, and how it's really celebrated Kurdish identity over centuries, often against, you know, incredible odds. We've gathered quite a bit of material, research papers, articles, historical takes, all shedding light on the key people and moments that shaped this really vibrant tradition.
That's right. And our aim is to sort of walk you through this rich tapestry to help understand its journey, its evolution, and why it's so deeply important as a carrier of culture, memory, and frankly, resistance.
Think of it as a guided tour through the highlights, giving you a clearer sense of its lasting impact.
Exactly. And it feels particularly important because, as our sources highlight, Kurdish literature has often been, well, on the fringes of global awareness.
Right.
Political fragmentation, suppression over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's made it tough for these voices to get out there. Often, the world only really pays attention during a political crisis.
So understanding this literary side gives you a much deeper view of Kurdish identity itself and its resilience.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And to really get a feel for this journey, we have to start at the beginning.
Which would be?
The oral tradition. Before widespread writing, this was everything. The sources really stress how vital it was for preserving not just stories, but history, cultural norms, identity itself.
Like living libraries, almost.
Pretty much.
Oh.
Carried by these figures called Dengbej poet-singers. Highly respected for their memory, their ability to recite these incredibly long epics and tales, sometimes with just a simple instrument or men at all.
And the content?
Epic poems,
yep.
Known as Laj. They'd recount historical battles, big events, deep love stories. It wasn't just about entertainment. It was, you know, how culture got passed down, how identity was performed and kept alive.
That sounds incredibly powerful. Culture literally sung into being generation after generation. So when does the written word start to take hold more firmly?
Well, there's some scholarly discussion about really early bits, maybe a prayer from the 15th century. But our sources generally point to the late 16th century for when we start seeing more substantial written works appearing.
Okay. And were certain dialects more dominant early on?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
In that classical period, Guarani and Kurmanji were the main players. Guarani had a strong tradition, especially linked with the Ardalan region. Kurmanji thrived in places like Botan under the Ottomans.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about some of the key figures from this classical era. Who's usually seen as a starting point?
Often, Ali Hariri comes up first. Though pinning down his exact dates is tricky. Could be 11th century, could be later. But he's seen as a real pioneer.
In what way?
As an early foundational voice in classical Kurmanji Sufi literature. His poetry touched on themes of love, but also, significantly, an early expression of love for Kurdistan, the land itself.
Interesting. Love for the homeland alongside the spiritual. What about the late 1500s, 1600s? That seems like a real high point for classical poetry.
Oh, it truly was. Mlay Tziri, active around then, is just revered. A master of Kurmanji, deeply immersed in Sufi mysticism. His Diwan, his collection of poems, is considered a masterpiece.
What makes it stand out?
Well, what's fascinating is how he engaged with the wider literary world. He clearly knew the great Persian masters Hafez, Rumi. He mastered forms like the ghazal, the qasida. But, crucially, he wasn't just imitating.
Right.
He infused these forms with a distinctly Kurdish spirit. Kurdish landscapes, Kurdish ways of expressing spirituality.
So he took these established, prestigious forms and really made them Kurdish.
Exactly. He's often credited with founding a unique Kurdish literary school within that broader Persianate cosmopolis, you know, that huge cultural sphere where Persian was the dominant language of high culture.
Okay, that context is helpful. Who else should we know from that time?
Fikeh Tehran is another major Kurmanji poet from this period. His big contribution, perhaps, was weaving Kurdish folklore directly into his written works.
Ah, bringing the oral into the written.
Precisely. Things like Zembil Firosh or Beta Dimdim, which tells the story of a famous Kurdish uprising. He brought these popular, orally transmitted stories into literature, often using language that was a bit more accessible while still dealing with mystical ideas.
So kind of bridging that gap between the Dengbej and the poets.
Yes, you could see it that way. And then, arguably the most famous classical figure.
Emedizani,
yes. Late 17th century, his epic, Memuzin, is just central. Often called the Kurdish national epic.
It's based on a love story, right?
On the surface, yes.
Yeah.
A tragic one. But what the sources really emphasize is its incredible political depth. Zani uses the story of Mem and Zin to explore Kurdish identity, to lament the lack of unity among the Kurdish principalities at the time.
Wow.
And he actually includes an explicit call for Kurdish unity and self-governance.
In the 17th century, that's remarkably early for that kind of explicit national consciousness in literature.
It really was. He's widely regarded as a proto-nationalist thinker because of this. He saw literature as a way to build that awareness. He also wrote educational works, like Nubihara Bisukan, aimed at teaching children Kurdish, linking language, learning, and identity right from the start.
Amazing. And what about the Gorani tradition during this period?
Kana Kubadi, around the mid-18th century, is a key name there, known for his version of the Shirin Uexuru story. But he was also incredibly passionate about the Kurdish language itself.
How so?
He famously declared that Kurdish was sweeter than sugar to him. He was a real advocate for using Gorani for serious literary work, reportedly even facing pushback for translating parts of the Quran into Kurdish.
Sweeter than sugar. That really says something, doesn't it, about the pride in the language?
It does. So if you look at this whole classical period, the big takeaway is this. While they were definitely part of the wider regional culture engaging with Sufism, with Persian literary forms, poets like Zani and Kubadi were already consciously using literature, not just for art or spirituality, but as a way to preserve and actively assert a distinct Kurdish identity, culture, and even political hopes.
That's a crucial point. The roots of literature as a tool for national consciousness were already being laid down.
Absolutely. Which brings us to the 19th century, where things really shift again.
Right. This is a period of major political change, isn't it?
Huge upheaval. The big Kurdish principalities, which had provided some level of autonomy and patronage, were dismantled by the rising Ottoman and Qajar empires. This led to a lot of instability.
Sounds disruptive for culture.
It was. But paradoxically, some sources suggest this loss of the old court structures also perhaps freed writers up a bit, allowed them to engage more directly with themes of identity and national concerns, maybe less tied to pleasing a patron.
Interesting. And this is also when the language map changes quite dramatically.
Yes, this is the century where the Sorani dialect really steps onto the main literary stage. The Boban principality, based in Sulaymani, played a key role here, actively promoting Sorani as a language for culture and administration, partly reacting to the established Gorani tradition.
And who was the pioneer, the one who really established Sorani literature?
That would have to be Nali. Active in the first half of the 19th century. Brilliant mind, apparently knew several languages. And he's credited with compiling the first major Diwan, or a collection of poems, in Sorani. Mm. He essentially founded the Sorani School of Poetry. His style was known for being quite intricate, very sophisticated.
Sounds like he almost single-handedly put Sorani on the literary map. Who came after him?
Haji Kadir Khoi, later in the century, is absolutely vital. He really picked up that nationalist torch we saw flickering with Zani and carried it forward with real intensity.
In what way?
He's seen as a key figure in developing both modern Kurdish poetry and modern Kurdish nationalism. He was a fierce advocate for education, for modernization, and he hammered home the idea that the Kurdish language itself was the bedrock of national identity. He urged Kurds to use their language, publish in it, start newspapers.
So for him, language wasn't just a tool, it was the identity in a way.
Fundamentally, yes. Essential for survival, for progress. We also need to mention Mastura Ardalan. A truly remarkable woman from the Ardalan court.
Tell me more.
She was a poet, writing in Gorani and Persian, but she was also a historian. She wrote the Tariki Ardalan, a history of her principality, which is considered a major historical work and possibly the first history written by a woman in the entire Middle East. Her poetry offers this unique female voice, sometimes subtly questioning the norms of her time.
A historian and a poet, that's powerful, especially for a woman in that era.
Absolutely. And another notable Sorani figure was Sheikh Reza Talabani. He was known for his very sharp, often satirical poetry. He tackled controversial subjects, brought social critique into verse, really broadening the range of what Sorani poetry was talking about.
Okay, so pausing here. The 19th century sees political disruption leading, maybe counterintuitively, to a sharper focus on identity. We get the dramatic rise of Sorani with figures like Nali, and then people like Haji Kadir Khoi explicitly link language, education, and modernization directly to Kurdish nationalism. Literature becomes an even more overt tool for assertion.
That sums it up really well. The political context was directly shaping the literature and its perceived mission.
Whoa! Hannah, the Chai Lady, is here. Roj Bosh, Hannah.
Roj Bosh. Ah, perfect timing.
Let's see. Okay, this is really good today. Nice and balanced, not bitter like sometimes. Definitely no extra sugar needed. Lovely.
Agreed. Hits the spot. a welcome little break.
Right then, back to it. The 20th century brings, well, a whole new set of challenges and changes, doesn't it?
Massive changes, yes. The end of the empires. The drawing of new nation-state borders. Mm-hmm. This led to systematic, often brutal, suppression of Kurdish language and culture in Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria.
How did that impact literature?
Profoundly. Using the language was restricted, publications were banned, intellectuals faced persecution, or worse. It was incredibly difficult. But there's a paradox here.
Which is?
The forced exile of so many writers and thinkers created this huge Kurdish diaspora. And these communities, especially in Europe, places like Sweden, became really important. They turned into vital centers for literary production.
So exile actually became a space where the literature could survive, even thrive.
In many ways, yes. Particularly for dialects under the most severe pressure, like Kurmanji in Turkey. The diaspora offered a haven to publish, to develop the language, to keep the flame alive, you know. This period also saw new forms gain ground. Poetry was always central, but the first short story appears around 1913, the first novel in 1935, though it took a while for prose to really take off widely.
And the language itself, any efforts to adapt it for the modern world, despite the pressures?
Yes, crucially. Saladet Ali Bedirksen, a Kurdish prince living in exile in Syria, did something fundamental. In the 1930s, he developed a Latin-based alphabet for Kurmanji, the Hawar alphabet.
Ah, like the Turkish alphabet reform.
Similar idea, yes. He published it, along with grammar rules, in his influential magazines, like Hawar. This standardized Kurmanji in a modern script made it more accessible for printing, for literacy, a huge step for modernization.
That standardization feels incredibly important. Who are some of the key literary figures navigating this really turbulent century?
So many foundational modern writers. There's Arab Shamilov, a Yazidi Kurd from the Soviet Union. He wrote Shivane Kurmanka, the Kurdish Shepherd. It's widely considered the first proper novel in the Kurmanji dialect.
The very first Kurmanji novel. That's a landmark.
Definitely. Then there's Sigurdsson, a towering figure.
Yeah.
Hugely prolific poet, writer, activist. His pen name means bleeding liver, which tells you something about the suffering he witnessed and wrote about. His poetry was often direct, accessible, very powerful, hitting themes of nationalism, resistance, social justice. Kime Ez, Who Am I, is one of his famous works. He also spent much of his life in exile, eventually in Sweden.
The name itself conveys so much struggle.
It really does. Then, in Iraqi Kurdistan, you have Abdullah Goran. He's generally seen as the father of modern Kurdish poetry.
How so? What did he do differently?
He broke radically with the classical forms, the strict meters and rhymes. He introduced things like blank verse, experimented with rhythm, drew on folk traditions, but also absorbed Western influences. He really reshaped the language of poetry.
So while someone like Sigurdsson was maybe the voice of the struggle, Goran was revolutionizing the form, the style of Kurdish poetry.
That's a good way to put it. Pushing aesthetic boundaries while others focused intensely on the political message, though Goran was political too, of course. And over in Iranian Kurdistan, figures like Hemin Mukriani and Hejar were central. They were celebrated as national poets during the short-lived Mahabad Republic in the 1940s.
Hejar's a big name, isn't he? For more than just poetry.
Immense contributions. He compiled a monumental Kurdish-Persian dictionary, the Hanbane Borin, which is still vital, and he undertook major translation projects, the Quran into Kurdish, but also, significantly, he translated Emedi Zani's Memuzin from Kurmanji into Sorani.
Translating the national epic across the major dialects, that feels like another powerful act of cultural bridge building.
It absolutely was. So this whole 20th century period really underscores how literature wasn't just an artistic pursuit. It was deeply, intrinsically linked with survival, with resistance, with developing the language itself, with holding on to national identity, often under extreme duress and from exile. The key insight might be how writers adapted innovating linguistically, adopting new genres like the novel, and using those diaspora spaces to keep the conversation going.
Which leads us finally into the 21st century. What's the landscape like now for Kurdish literature?
It's continuing to evolve, definitely. The novel and the short story are much more established now, much more central than perhaps they once were. Stylistically, we're seeing some really interesting things. Well, the use of magical realism is quite prominent, especially in the work of Bakir Ali. It seems to be a powerful way for writers to grapple with the often surreal, trauma-filled realities of recent Kurdish history war, displacement, political absurdity. Some scholars even talk about a specific Kurdish surrealism.
Magical realism makes sense as a tool to process experiences that defy ordinary description.
It really does seem to resonate. And importantly, we're seeing more and more women writers coming to the fore, bringing perspectives that perhaps weren't as visible previously.
Okay, who are some of the contemporary names that people should know?
Bakhtar Ali is probably the most internationally recognized contemporary Kurdish novelist right now. His works, often using that magical realist style, are complex, multi-layered explorations of war, memory, trauma, the search for meaning. The Last Pomegranate of the World is one that gained a lot of attention in translation.
His work sounds crucial for understanding the modern Kurdish psyche, perhaps.
I think so. Then there's Behruz Burkani, an Iranian Kurd. He became internationally known for No Friend But the Mountains. What's astonishing is that he wrote it primarily via text messages while detained in an Australian offshore detention center.
Via text message, yeah. From detention.
Yes. It's an incredible feat of literary resilience. And the book itself is this searing, powerful account of the refugee experience, a major work on human rights. It shows Kurdish voices speaking out from the most extreme circumstances.
That's just staggering.
It is. And Sarah Omar is another important voice. She's recognized as the first internationally acclaimed female novelist from Iraqi Kurdistan. Her novels, like Dude of Askarin, The Dead Washer, bravely tackle very difficult, sensitive issues within Kurdish society, things like women's rights, honor killings, trauma.
Bringing difficult conversations into the open through fiction.
Exactly. And someone like Jan Dost, originally from Kobani in Syria and now living in Germany, he's notable because he writes fluently and publishes novels in both Kurmanji and Sorani. His work often connects historical events with contemporary political realities, like his novel Kobani.
Writing across both major dialects like that, that itself feels like a significant act of cultural connection. How are these writers reaching people outside the Kurdish world?
Translation is absolutely vital. It's really a form of cultural activism, in many ways, getting these stories, these perspectives, out to a global audience. The recognition people like Bakhtar Ali, Bukhani, Sir Omar have received is largely thanks to dedicated translators and publishers.
But you mentioned earlier our sources noted a potential complication with translation.
Yes, it's a complex dynamic. On the one hand, translation is essential for global reach, for making the literature visible, maybe even helping preserve the language by giving it international standing. But there's also a concern raised that if there's too much focus on translating into dominant languages, like English or even Turkish, Persian, Arabic, it might paradoxically lessen the incentive or need for people within the Kurdish regions to read the works in the original Kurdish.
Ah, I see. A potential risk of undermining the original language readership while trying to promote it globally.
It's a delicate balance.
How do you reach the world without potentially weakening the connection to the source language at home? It highlights the need to support literacy and publishing in Kurdish alongside translation efforts.
That's a really important nuance. And what about those Kurdish writers who choose to write mainly in other languages?
Like Salim Barakat, who writes primarily in Arabic, or Yashar Kemal, who wrote in Turkish, both massive literary figures whose work is saturated with Kurdish themes and experiences. It reflects the complex realities writers face, you know?
Yeah.
Decisions based on political borders, where publishing is possible, who the intent of audience is. It's another layer of what it means to create literature from a stateless position.
So looking back across this whole vast suite from the ancient Dengbej chanting epics to someone texting a novel from detention,
yeah.
What's the main thread, the big story here? I think it has to be resilience. Just sheer, incredible resilience. Despite centuries of political division, fragmentation, active suppression, statelessness, Kurdish literature hasn't just clung on. It has adapted. It has innovated. It has consistently been this vital space for keeping cultural identity alive, for remembering history, for artistic expression, and yes, as a powerful tool for resistance and asserting a national presence.
That idea of a stateless literature, not just surviving, but finding ways to gain an international voice, it feels like a real testament to the power of culture itself.
It truly does. It shows how literature can cross borders, speak to universal human conditions, even when the people creating it lack a state. And it's the dedication of the writers, the translators, the communities both at home and scattered across the globe that keeps this voice getting stronger.
It's a remarkable story. Thank you so much for guiding us through it all. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure. It's a history that really demonstrates the power of words and stories, especially when facing adversity.
Absolutely. And for everyone listening, we really do encourage you to seek out translations. Reading some of these works we've mentioned, hearing these voices directly is the best way to truly appreciate this rich and enduring heritage.
And perhaps a final thought to leave you with. How will Kurdish literature continue this journey? How will it navigate the unique tightrope of statelessness, its own linguistic diversity, and that double-edged sword of translation aiming for global recognition while nurturing its roots? What can this incredible story of literary resilience teach us all about the enduring power of culture against the odds?
Thank you for joining us for this exploration.